Greetings and salutations, shoppers. This is Mr. Venom, welcoming you back to the grand reopening of the Crystal Lake Gift Shop. And of course, my manager on duty is Mr. Mike Merriman. How you doing, Mike?
What's up? It's glad to finally have the shop open. You know, it's kind of funny because on our other shows, we talk about how Crystal Lake Gift Shop, oh, it's the easiest show to plan and prep for, and we can bust them out, like, easy, and then we just go all this time without recording a new episode, but it happens.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, life, as we were just talking before we hit record, life sometimes interrupts our plans, and the end of 2023 and so far the beginning of 2024 have been very disruptful in Venom land, both for Mr. and Mrs. So it's been rough, some deaths in the family, some changes in employment, some hospital stays. Yeah, it's been a rough few months, but hopefully things are going to turn around really soon. I am endlessly optimistic because that's about all I have is my optimism at this point. So folks, yeah, so welcome back to the shop. As you look around the shop, you'll see that we have some new items. Please be careful handling our sharp objects because we have new items. We have the Jason Voorhees pizza cutter, the Jason Voorhees machete letter opener, and then right there on the wall, you can see the Jason Voorhees machetes. So yeah, please be careful handling our sharp objects. And one other new item on the shelves, ladies, if you pick up a box of the pre-bloodied Voorhees tampons, please realize those are novelty items. Do not use them. You will get a UTI. So you have been warned. So folks, back to the festivities at hand. Let's go ahead and welcome our returning temp clerk who has been with us, who actually was with us the last time the shop was open before we did our renovations. And that is, of course, the lovely and amazing Lacey Lou. Miss Lacey Lou, how have you been?
I'm good. Nobody cares about the homeless.
Somebody cares about the homeless, and we're going to find out about them very soon.
Yes, well, I'll subscribe to you and Mrs. Venom.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, I'll take all the positive vibes I can get, man. It's been rough out here in Southern California, but we're surviving, and, you know, we still have a smile on our face most of the day, so all I can do is stay positive and keep those fingers crossed that, you know, our luck will change. So anyway, let's get back to the festivities at hand. This is, of course, the Crystal Lake Gift Shop, where we look at the Friday the 13th, the series, which aired from 1987 to 1990. Today, we are looking at season 1, episode 4. And this episode is entitled A Cup of Time. This episode originally aired in October of 1987, October 19th, 1987, just a week, a little over a week before Halloween. That's exciting. Halloween 87, man, I probably had a lot of fun. I was 17 that year. Ooh, that must have been a fun Halloween. Anyway, this episode clocks in at 46 minutes. It is directed by Harvey Frost, written by Frank Mancuso Jr., Barbara Sachs, and Larry B. Williams, and our stars, as always, John D. LeMay as Ryan, Louise Roby as Mickey, and Chris Wiggins as Jack. Our description for this episode is as follows. A mysterious teacup gives an elderly woman the power of eternal youth at a cost. I think they could just add that at a cost tag to the end of every description for every episode of this series. Doesn't every item work at a cost? So let's talk about our episode here. This is, of course, the story of Lady Di. She is a hard rocker who has a certain teacup with a certain ability that seems very interesting. So before we get into our little bit of a walkthrough, let's go ahead and talk some general thoughts first. So, of course, let's bring in our guest, Miss Lacey Lou, and ask her, Lacey, what did you think of A Cup of Time?
Well, Mr. Mike Merrihoe watched it before me, and he was, like, not enthusiastic about it at all. He's like, dude, it's about a fucking haunted teacup. So I'm thinking it's, like, going to be, like, super bad, but I actually enjoyed this episode, so I don't know what crack he's smoking. I thought it was fucking fun as hell. Well, I mean, I don't know if hell would be fun, but it's fun. Yeah, I was super confused by why Mike didn't like it. I thought it was probably, he said it was his least favorite episode of the season so far. I mean, only four episodes in, but I just kept thinking about the fucking monastery. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, we got, like, a punk rock bitch in this, like, that wants to just sing about teacups. Like, this is fun.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking myself. Yeah, for me, I'm right there with Miss Lacey Liu. This might actually be my second favorite episode so far. Obviously, we're only four episodes in. We got a long way to go. 68 more episodes in front of us. But aside from the series premiere, I thought this was one of the more fun episodes. Yes, there's a lot of problems with the episode, but ultimately there's going to be problems with every episode of Friday the 13th. You know, obviously a low budget story about cursed items. So a lot of time, you know, a lot of stories just aren't going to shine the way others do. But I'm with Lacey Liu. I had a pretty good time with this one. I was a fan of Lady Di as a character. Yeah, she's hokey. She's over the top. But I thought it worked for me, you know, as a Friday the 13th villain. I thought she worked really well for me. Obviously, you know, we get more examples of Jack and his ability to get Mickey and Ryan into any situation in any private party or gathering that they want. Because Jack is magic, apparently, and can make passes, press passes for just about anything. So, you know, we get a lot of this, you know, the same chords that we've kind of seen repeated throughout the series. But like I said, overall, I like this villain. I liked our secondary character of Birdie, who was introduced in this episode. I don't remember if we see Birdie again later in the series. I hope we do, because I actually did like her. I thought she was a very organic character, you know, and especially for those who don't know, yes, Mr. Venom is an older guy. And to hear a lot of the things that Birdie was saying, it kind of rings true. You know, you feel like people value you less because you're older. And I'm in the middle of a job hunt right now, and I'm experiencing that firsthand. You know, who the hell wants to hire, you know, somebody like me with over 25 years experience when they can hire somebody right out of college? So, yeah, age discrimination is a thing, my friends. And depression because of that age discrimination is also a thing. So, yeah, like I said, I really liked Birdie. Kristen, Our little girl in the episode, I could take her or leave her. I thought she was okay at best. Not nearly as good as our little girl from episode one with the haunted doll. I thought that performance was a little bit more believable. This one, you know, I mean, she did her job for whatever it's worth. And then the episode, I mean, there are multiple head-scratching scenes in this episode that just logically could never happen, you know? Two people in the general public can't just walk into a morgue in the middle of a police investigated fucking autopsy. You can't just walk into a fucking morgue, but apparently they do it in this episode. So again, you've got your suspension of disbelief. And then, like I said, at the end, the one thing I will say about this episode is that it's a rather uneventful ending. With a lot of Friday the 13th episodes, we actually get like a final confrontation between like Mickey, Ryan, and Jack and the person who's holding the cursed item. And in this one, it just kind of fizzles out. Like, you know, the cursed item is eventually taken away from its owner, and they just kind of go the way of the dodo after that. So definitely an uneventful ending, but overall, I did enjoy this episode. I enjoyed the terrible music in it, and my friends, the music in this episode is awful. This woman actually does a cover of I'm a Little Teapot as a hard rock song. Oh my God. My balls shrank a little bit when I heard that the first time. I just could not get over that. So that's enough for me, though. Let's go ahead and bring in our store manager, Mr. Mike Merriman. Mike, what'd you think of A Cup of Time?
Yeah, so I was when I was talking to Lacey, I was probably being a little harsh on the episode itself. I was probably more reacting to the teacup itself, and I was, and it made me think like maybe in future episodes we can judge like the actual cursed item and like the concept behind it and like how it ties into the episode. Is it cool or is it not? Because I think that you can have good episodes. I'm learning with like where the item itself is a little underwhelming or vice versa. I think there's a lot of good scenes in here. There's a lot of good, as you said, side characters. Like even the simple, like I wouldn't call it cameo, but like the one scene characters, like at the punk rock club when the little girl walks up and tries to ask the punk rocker about her hair, and she just totally is rude to the little girl. I thought it was hilarious when, you know, they're trying to question the little girl, and it's like they're just like, hey, I think you should come with us. It's like, I don't know how smart it is to be trying to just grab a little girl and say, like, hey, you should come with us because we got questioning to do you. That I found that kind of funny.
You were a different time, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, obviously. I agree with Venom. The episode kind of fizzles without the confrontation you're used to, complete with the tea party joke at the end in the shop, which I was like, oh, God. But, like, overall, the episode wasn't that bad. I think I was just more hyper-focused on the fact that it was a cursed teacup. And I guess, like, you know, the curse of the teacup with the magical tea in it. But conceptually, you know, it's kind of like your classic Fountain of Youth, like, curse. Just someone trying to stay young and that. So I think it was easy to follow. It wasn't too confusing. Always, I mean, these episodes are mostly always going to be somewhat cheesy. So overall, though, yeah, four episodes in, it's hard to, like, do a hard ranking yet until, like, we get a handful more going. But, yeah, I would say it was fine. It was a fine episode, sure.
What more do you want out of a haunted object, Mike?
Mike wanted to see ghosts coming out of the cup and killing people. Like,
not.
It did look like there were some, like, stop motion vines or something.
yeah, that effect was a little questionable. I know it's 1987, so I'm trying not to get you too judgmental on the effects, but yeah, wow, especially when the vine went back into the cup. Holy shit, that looked awful. we also have a guest star in this episode that I actually forgot to mention, and her name is Hillary Shepherd. Hillary Shepherd, she plays Lady Di, our antagonist for this episode. And Hillary Shepherd, for the few that may remember her as being a member of a band called the American Dolls in the early to mid-80s, a very short-lived all-girl rock band. I don't remember what their major hit was, but I do remember they had, like, one song that was mildly recognizable, but I don't offhand remember what it was called. So she's our guest star for this one. Basically, after American Girls broke up, Hillary Shepherd just kind of took on acting headlong. So she's a professional actress now, you know, long IMDb list, mostly television appearances, but also, you know, some movies here and there, which is cool to see. I, for some reason, I thought she was like when I saw her the first time in the episode, I could have sworn that I recognized the face, that I know her from something. But I looked through her filmography and TV episode appearances, and nothing really struck me as something that I might have watched. So I'm not sure. I think she might have just been my 80s dream woman, and I just didn't realize it. So there you go.
She's listed as Bar Girl in 40-year-old version, and I'm trying to think in my head if, like, she actually, like, had screen time or dialogue, or if she just kind of, like, appeared on camera, like, in the background, because I can't place her. It's been a while since I've seen it, though.
Yeah, if her name is Bar Girl, she probably had one line at most.
Yeah. She reminded me a lot of, like, and with, like, the hair color and all of that. She reminded me a lot of, I don't know if you guys seen the movie Teen Witch. But yes. she reminded me of Shauna, the one that Louise goes and wants to be like and gets her jacket at the concert. And she resembled her a lot to me. And so, but it wasn't her, obviously, but they did look a lot alike. And only Shauna had much better music than Lady Gaga's teacup song. So.
Damn, I haven't seen Teen Witch in years.
Yeah, like, look up Shauna from Teen Witch, and she definitely looked, they definitely had, like, the same look. I think they're both trying to go for, like, the Paula Abdul kind of thing.
Now, I was wondering, do you guys, I'm sure you're familiar with the movie, of course, Return of the Living Dead, classic zombie film. In that movie, there's a character named Casey, and the actress's name is Jewel Shepherd. I wonder if they're related, because they kind of look alike. Do you guys remember the character in Return of the Living Dead that I'm talking about? She was like the bitch that didn't like anybody.
Yeah, I'm friends with Jewel on Facebook.
Okay. ask her if she's related to Hillary, because I feel like they look alike. next time you message her, ask her, because, yeah, I brought up pictures, because I actually thought it was her at first. I legit thought it was the girl from Return of the Living Dead, but it's not. It's a different Shepherd. So,
yeah. She has on her IMDb, she just has a spouse and children listed. No siblings, but that doesn't necessarily mean, because sometimes IMDb is incomplete.
Oh, absolutely. Not like they're going to give you the whole actor's family tree or anything.
She was born Hillary Shapiro.
Ah! Not a Shepherd. All right, so let's get into our story and, talk about it a little bit. I'm just going to run through a very, quick walkthrough of the episode. Stop me at any point if there's scenes that we want to talk about. I know there's scenes I want to talk about, so let's go ahead and get into it. So our episode opens up with homeless people in the park turning up dead. we see a scene where a mysterious we see a scene of a woman, definitely a female, underneath a black robe. We can't see their face right away, but she's offering a homeless person a hot cup of tea. The homeless person is happy and takes the cup of tea. Unfortunately, when the victim takes a sip, the ivy design that's on the outside of the teacup actually comes alive and strangles the victim. And this, in turn, makes the owner of the cup younger. Basically the cup is stealing life force from its victims and giving it to its owner. So basically perpetual youth. As Mike said earlier, Fountain of Youth, Phantom of Youth. At this point, we are introduced to Birdie. She's a social worker who has a crush on Jack. She's an adorable little old lady who has this cute little crush on Jack. When we meet her, she's stopping by the store to drop off some curtains that she's been hemming as a favor to Jack and the cousins because they're neighbors. She has a business in the same neighborhood. She starts talking about one of her cases, a young runaway that was murdered in the park the night before. And that's the woman that we see killed in the cold open. And then Birdie mentions that she's not the first, and police don't have much interest in solving the string of killings because they all involve homeless people. So, no families, nobody to, identify the body, things like that. So, police aren't going to put all their resources on that. Sadly, that also happens in real life. I watch a lot of crime documentaries, and yeah, the homeless and prostitutes especially are, when they're hunted by serial killers, the police just don't put in the same amount of effort if a pretty white girl from the suburbs gets killed. So, yeah, that's just my minority self being mad at cops. Excuse me for a second. Mickey recalls another one of Birdie's cases being killed earlier in the year, but Birdie corrects her, basically saying that, no, my friend Sarah disappeared. She wasn't killed, or at least she hopes that she wasn't killed. Now, Ryan and Mickey offer to look into the case and head down to the coroner's office. While Mickey is kind of verbally sparring with the lieutenant who's there, and by the way, yeah, this is the scene that really irks the shit out of me. I'm sorry, folks. You can't just walk into a fucking city morgue while an autopsy's going on and just walk in and literally hover over the fucking body. You're like, God damn it. I was literally waiting for the police officer to like slap Mickey in the face for literally hovering over the goddamn body. That was so frustrating.
What makes them think they can just like go and investigate anything? Like, they don't have like detective licenses, do they?
Not remotely.
Yeah, that's something like one of the fun things about like rewatching the series is like, because Venom, you mentioned when this aired, you were 17. I was seven, so like I was a kid, and these are things I didn't probably think about at the time. But like, what's their job titles? Like shopkeeper assistants, yet they're gonna go around just like investigate things. Like,
what
jurisdiction do they have? Like, and it's funny because you can kind of view the episode as in like, oh, the cops are kind of being dicks to them. But then at the same time, it's like, well, if you're a police officer and like these two people are just like showing up and demanding to be like doing their own investigation and messing with possible crime scenes, like you'd probably be a little standoffish to them too.
Well, I did like that the cop was like, I hate these neighborhood watch people. Like, so basically they're just like the neighborhood watch do-gooders.
Yeah.
I just assumed who they were. All right, so during the autopsy, a couple of pieces of ivy fall off of the body, and Ryan pockets a piece of the ivy that he finds on the floor. When he gets back to the shop, he gives the piece of ivy to Jack. Jack identifies it as swapper's ivy. This is a plant that was thought to be extinct since the 14th century. It's indigenous to England, and it was considered an evil plant. If you had some of the swapper's ivy in your possession, you could trade for whatever you wanted. That was kind of the legend. He doesn't really specify if this was like some kind of spiritual or magical trade or if it was like an actual physical bartering type thing. He just kind of leaves it at that, that you can make a trade. Jack turns to the manifest looking for anything decorated with ivy. And lo and behold, I mean, it's only a 46-minute show, so he can't look for long. Lo and behold, he finds it right away. He finds a porcelain teacup with no marks on it, white, with a hand-painted swapper's ivy design along the rim. They find out that Lewis sold the cup, and don't forget Lewis being the original owner of the store who was selling, you know, who made the deal with the devil. He sold the cup 2 years earlier to a man named Fat Eddie Burrell, who sounds gangster as fuck. Mickey and Ryan,
mafia-like name.
Hell yeah, Fat Eddie. I mean, that screams mafioso. Hell yeah.
It makes me think of Fast Eddie.
There you go. All right, so when Mickey and Ryan go looking for Fat Eddie Burrell, they end up going to his last known address, and it turns out to be just an abandoned house. It obviously has been abandoned. Nobody's lived there for a long time. Everything's dirty. The doors were open, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, one of those bed that folds into a wall kind of falls down onto the floor, and when it falls, it exposes a pile of bones. Yep. Fast Eddie is no longer with us, or Fat Eddie. Damn it, Mike, you got me saying Fast Eddie. Fat Eddie is no longer with us and no longer fat. So the death diet actually worked for him. After this, we are introduced to Lady Di. She is the kind of our rock star of the episode. She's prepping for her concert to benefit the homeless. And her manager, Langley, who's kind of a nice guy, but he's kind of a douche at the same time. It's kind of weird. Like, he's nice to the homeless girl, but then he's kind of an ass in other scenes. We'll get to that in a little bit. He mentions that she looks a little tired. And immediately, as soon as he says to Lady Di that she looks a little tired, she looks into her little makeup mirror that she carries with her everywhere, and she rushes off. So it's obvious that it's Lady Di. She is the owner of the cup. She is using the ability of the cup to keep her youth so that she could be a young, hot-looking rock star the rest of her life. But obviously, like I said, at this point, she's out looking for a new victim. Now, while finding a victim, the little girl, Kristen, that we meet very briefly earlier in the episode, shows up in the scene. Let's see, when Lady Di offers the homeless guy a drink of tea, the little girl, Kristen, also walks up to the pair and asks if she could have some tea, too. Lady Di says, no, this is only an adult drink, I'm sorry. But then she notices that Kristen is staring at her bracelet. She tells Kristen, if I'll give you this bracelet if you leave us alone, which Kristen accepts. She takes the bracelet, she leaves, but she doesn't leave the entire scene. She hides in a bush and continues to watch the events that unfold in front of her. The next morning, Mickey and Ryan take Birdie to the park to identify this latest victim. This time it's a guy. Birdie does not recognize him. By the way, Birdie is a social worker, which is why she has so many connections to all these homeless people and, you know, people in need. So, you know, this is why Birdie is always at these crime scenes identifying these homeless people, because she's probably one of the only people in town who could identify them. So there you go. While at the park, Birdie does not recognize the new victim. The homeless girl, Kristen, is there at the scene while the police are cleaning up the scene, getting rid of the body. She walks up to Mickey and Birdie and asks for food. Unfortunately, they don't have any, but instantly Birdie recognizes the bracelet that the little girl is wearing, the one that she was given the night before by Lady Di. And she says that bracelet belonged to Sarah. They ask the little girl where she got the bracelet. The little girl gets scared, starts saying, I didn't steal it, I didn't steal it. And eventually the little girl just runs off. basically, Ryan shows up with his car. The little girl just runs off into the woods, and they kind of lose track of her. By the way, did you notice that Ryan got knocked over by a fucking little girl? I mean, knocked on his ass. This girl, yeah, this girl's what, 10 or 11 years old, and she knocked a full-grown adult on his ass. I couldn't believe
it. She body checked him.
Oh, Ryan is such a bitch. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. LeMay, but yeah, your character is a bitch. Jesus. And it's not like the little girl was even trying to knock him over. She was just trying to run away, and she bumped into him, and he falls flat. So, yeah.
Well, to awesome be job, Ryan. Fair, she ran away as soon as he rolled up and got out of the car.
Right,
so
absolutely.
She probably thought he was coming to take her away.
Definitely. When they ask Kristen where she got the necklace, she basically mentions that she got it the night before. And, you know, they ask her some questions about the woman, like, you know, was it an old woman? Because, like I said, Birdie thinks that it's Sarah's bracelet. And the little girl says, no, it was a pretty lady with a man with hair like fire is how she described it. Birdie, you can see the expression on Birdie's face change because she knows that Sarah was not a young woman with fiery red hair. She was an old woman with white hair. So Birdie ends up giving Mickey and Ryan a picture of Sarah. Ryan and Jack start to believe that Lady Di and Sarah Burrell are the same person. We actually see Ryan takes the picture that was given to him of Sarah, then he takes one of Lady Di's album covers, and he starts painting the album cover to age the face of the woman on the album cover, and when he does this, it ends up matching the old woman in the picture, the picture of Sarah that was given to them. They start to put it together. Lady Di is the killer, she is the owner of the cup, and they need to get the cup away from her.
Did you notice, though, that it wasn't, like, adult painting? Like, it was, like, those little – it was, like, the little ones that, like, you give, like, kids to paint, like, with watercolor. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It was, like, the little kid paint. You know what I'm talking, Mike? Like, you're a dad. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I know.
Yes. Like, you would not be giving your kids, like, some expensive high-end paint kit. So how did that end up in here for this? Yeah.
Exactly.
Like little campaigns. I don't know.
Okay, so while Jack and Mickey and Ryan are talking about the situation and talking about the cup and what Lady Di is potentially doing with it, Birdie overhears the conversation when she comes to the shop to invite Jack over to dinner. Seeing as how she is wearing she's wearing a dress that looks like she borrowed it from one of her daughters. Like, it's a dress that's way too young for her. I mean, hey, Birdie is not a bad-looking lady. For an older lady, probably in her 70s, she's not terrible, my friends. But like I said, she's wearing something that's way too youthful for her in an obvious attempt to get Jack's attention. Yeah, Birdie wants that Jack D, my friends. Oh, she needs it. Jack, of course, turns down her invitation, and Birdie leaves the store frustrated and storms out. Now, the next day, Mickey and Ryan hear that Lady Di is going to be at a radio station doing an interview, talking about her homeless benefit concert that she's going to be doing, and also her tour that she's preparing for. That she's basically the benefit show is like the first stop of the tour, and then she hits the road for the remainder of the tour. Now, at this point, this is where Jack works his magic and once again gets them a press pass into this radio station. What kind of magic Jack has is fucking beyond me. Because Jack, I feel like Jack knows every single person in this city and can get Mickey and Ryan into anything they need to. But without explanation, it's just kind of like, what? Like, okay, all right, cool. So we just have to accept it. Ryan goes as a reporter from Rock Icon magazine, and Mickey dresses as his sexy chauffeur, which leads to a very cringy conversation in a little bit that we'll get to here. But they walk in, they end up barging into the recording booth just as Lady Di's manager mentions to Lady Di that she's looking tired. And again, Lady Di pulls out her mirror, realizes that, you know, her skin is starting to wrinkle a little bit. And at that exact same moment, Ryan and Mickey burst into the radio booth and they start asking about Sarah. They start asking Lady Di about Sarah. And then one of them mentions a teacup. And as soon as one of them mentions a teacup, Lady Di bolts out the back door of the radio station, not to be seen again. Obviously, because of the comment from her manager, she needs to go get another victim. Mm-hmm. So like I said, at this point, Lady Di is on edge, doesn't want to answer any questions about Sarah or the teacup. Security ends up dragging Mickey and Ryan out while Lady Di sneaks out the back door. While in the alley of the radio station, Lady Di runs into Birdie. And because Lady Di is starting to show a little bit of her age, like her, you know, her power's starting to wear off a little bit, Birdie actually recognizes her as a young-looking Sarah and actually calls her Sarah, says, "Sarah, is that you?" Without answering, Lady Di turns around and runs down the other end, you know, to the other side of the alley. While doing that, she runs into the little girl, Kristen, again. And as we see earlier, when she lifted the wallet off of the police investigator – oh, not the police investigator, the manager. She lifted the wallet off of Lady Di's manager. She's obviously a pickpocket and very good at it. While she walks by Lady Di in the alley, she actually reaches into her bag and grabs the teacup. And then as they're leaving the radio station, this is the cringy, just uncomfortable conversation where, as you know, Mickey dressed as a chauffeur, a sexy chauffeur, to drive Ryan as a rock and roll reporter to the radio station. They leave the radio station and Ryan asks her for the keys. And she's like, "What? No, I'm the driver. I drove here." And he says something along the lines of, "I only let you drive because you look better in the outfit than I did," which is so fucking cringy. And then, of course, she calls him a chauvinist. So at least she's aware that her cousin is a scumbag. So she calls him a chauvinist and she gives him the keys and they end up pulling out. So later in the evening, we see Lady Di in the park and she's with a man, desperate to give him a drink. She's horrified to discover that the cup is missing. The cup is not in her purse where she thought it was. She starts crawling around through the park looking for it, literally on all fours, thinking that she may have dropped it right there in the general vicinity. So as she's looking for the cup, she ends up running into Kristen, the homeless girl, who is actually living in this park. She basically has this little sleeping bag with some of the possessions and things that she's stolen, her booty, if you will, and she's hidden in a bush. Someone ends up finding Kristen at her campsite. We see a POV shot of someone chasing after her. Finally, when the camera catches up to Kristen and turns her around, it turns out it's Mickey and Ryan. It's not Lady Di. Obviously, as viewers, we're led to believe that it's Lady Di chasing Kristen for the cup, but it's actually Mickey. Mickey then tries to make a deal with Kristen for the cup. First, she says to Kristen, "Would you believe that it's our cup? Would you believe if I told you that that cup belongs to us?" And of course, the little girl says no. I don't know why the opinion of a homeless little girl would matter. Take the fucking cup, for God's sakes, but no. And then you would think, what's the easiest thing to get an item from a homeless person? Give them some money, maybe? I think that would be the easiest thing. I think that's the first thing any of us would think of if a homeless person had something that we wanted from them. Give them some fucking money. I mean, that's what they need. Instead, Mickey, what's that?
booze,
drugs, weed, whatever. Fuck. I mean, if it's a homeless guy, I mean, it's a buyer's market, you know? If you want something, you give them what they need. So either Mickey and Ryan just have no money at all ever, or they're just not quick thinkers. Because what they end up doing is they end up offering Kristen a bed, a warm bed, a warm meal, and according to Mickey, a cup that's almost as pretty. And the little girl accepts the offer. So after this, Jack and Mickey, they take Kristen upstairs at Curious Goods. Yes, of course. The best place for a little girl to stay is at a store filled with cursed items. Rock on. Ryan, as Jack and Mickey are putting Kristen upstairs, Ryan is tasked with putting the teacup back in the vault. But Ryan is so greedy and hungry for fucking potato chips that rather than take the cup to the vault first, he drops the cup off at Jack's desk to then go into the kitchen and stuff his face with potato chips. After he gets the chips, he goes upstairs and joins Mickey and Jack and Kristen in the bedroom. And we see someone coming up to the front of Curious Goods. Now, the door is locked. This person ends up smashing one of the panes of glass in the door, breaking into the store, and almost like they knew exactly where the fucking thing would be, they walk right up to Jack's desk, and they grab the cup, and they bolt out of there. In them leaving, they weren't, whoever it is, they weren't careful enough to close the door quietly behind them. They let the store, the front door of the store, like, slam behind them, which, of course, alerted everyone that somebody was down there. They then they go down there. Let's see. Ryan realizes that the cup is gone, and he makes chase. He gives chase to the person who took the cup. Now this is the scene. This is another scene that made me absolutely laugh my ass off because I can't believe that it would ever happen in real life. The robber, while still wearing a pair of pantyhose as a mask over her head, successfully hails a fucking cab. My friends, no cab driver is going to pull over and pick up somebody using pantyhose as a mask. That's just, no, that's asking to be murdered in your own cab. That doesn't make any sense. Once in the cab, then Birdie takes off her mask. Well, I just gave away the spoiler. The woman takes off the mask to expose that it's Birdie. It's not Lady Di who stole the cup. Why did Birdie steal the cup? Because she overheard the conversation earlier about the cup giving its owner eternal youth. And don't forget, Birdie is the woman who's been complaining about being old, about being invisible to men, and blah, 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 because of her age. So, so after the robber flags a cab, we see that it's Birdie. Birdie's tired of being lonely and seems to think that youth is going to give her a social life, or at the very least is going to get Jack's attention. My issue is, if she ends up getting, like, really young and hot, why would she still want Jack? Jack's not going to want to date a 20-year-old, or a woman that looks like a 20-year-old anyway. Hey, like I said, Birdie's plan is just all over the place, not well thought out. And we see that following in Lady Di's footsteps, Birdie decides to go to the park and offers a homeless man a drink. Whereas Lady Di was offering these people hot tea, Birdie, she knows her homeless people because she offers them scotch. And she offers them a little bit of scotch in the cursed cup. Now, the man sits there and he's eagerly waiting for the cup to be handed to him with the whiskey or scotch or whatever it is in it. And he takes a sip out of it. And literally, as soon as he takes a sip out of it, we see the ivy on the cup start to come to life. And instantly, Birdie takes the cup away from the man and throws it to the ground and says, no, no, I can't do this. I can't do this. Now, the homeless guy is obviously pissed off because he thinks this old lady is fucking with him, offering him a drink and then taking it away.
That's alcohol abuse.
Absolutely. Waste of some good single malt scotch, man. Come on. After throwing the cup down and upsetting the homeless guy, she ends up giving the whole rest of the bottle to him as a peace offering. And they end up staying there at the bench all night and just talking. I don't know what they talk about. We don't actually get to see it. But the next morning, the sun is up, and Birdie and the homeless man are still there on the bench. And Birdie thanks him for talking with her all night. And the homeless guy says, you know, for an old lady, you're pretty cool. Obviously, she got him drunk. So apparently he has a new friend. So
he just stumbles off.
And he just stumbles up. I mean, where does a homeless man go? He actually said, I have to go do my rounds. What? What do you got, like, different? He probably has to hit all the different dumpsters he hits, you know, for lunch or whatever. I don't know.
For cans, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So some recycling. So anyway, Birdie ends up having a change of heart. She ends up going to a phone booth next to the park, calling up Jack and Mickey, and letting them know that she has the cup. We don't see the entire phone conversation. She just says, I have something that belongs to you. The camera pans down to the cup. And then we see Lady Di looking like a goddamn cartoon witch in the bushes. She looked like she bought a costume at, like, Spirit Halloween and didn't put it on right. It just looks awful. Anyway.
Notice how much people actually hide in bushes in this episode?
No shit, like, you can't be seen in a bush. It's so crazy.
it's clear as day. Hiding spot, bro. We'll get there.
So funny. All right, so after Birdie makes the phone call, Jack, Mickey, and Ryan rush over to the park, to the phone booth that Birdie calls from. Unfortunately, Birdie is not there anymore. And when we find Birdie, she's actually being chased by Lady Di through the park in fucking broad daylight, my friends. Like, no one seems to care that these two old ladies are chasing each other through the park. Okay. The other thing I'm thinking, too, is Birdie obviously knows that Sarah/Lady Di is chasing her for the cup. Why didn't she just fucking smash the cup on a rock? The cup doesn't belong to her. She doesn't give a shit about the cup. Unless she has some just...
Well, it's Jack's cup.
Yeah, it's Jack's. That's what I was going to say. That maybe because it belongs to Jack and she's got the sweets on Jack, that she wants to return it and do the right thing. That's admirable. That's fine. But this is a life and death situation. You know, a fucking witch is chasing you through the park for this thing in your hand where if you literally throw it on a rock and smash it, it's over. There, you know, Lady Di won't be able to do anything. Birdie's safe. Everybody's safe. But nope. She just keeps running. Eventually, Birdie ends up tripping in the park. Lady Di grabs a big, like a fist-sized rock and smashes Birdie in the face. At first, I thought she killed her. I mean, because Birdie's got to be like in her 70s, and she just got smashed in the face with a fucking boulder. At that exact moment, Lady Di takes the cup and runs away, and Mickey and Ryan show up at that exact moment as she's running away. They don't see her. They miss her, but they see Birdie on the ground. They see the bloody rock on the ground. Ryan, like an absolute fucking genius, picks up the bloody rock because I think he just wanted to have his fingerprints on the murder weapon. So there you go. And of course, as they're standing over Birdie's potentially lifeless body, the police show up. And the police investigator from the autopsy scene is there with them. He instantly arrests Mickey and Ryan for the assault on Birdie, potentially murder. Birdie is still alive at this point, but she's out cold, and, you know, because of her advanced age, they're not sure if she's going to make it. We see Jack, because don't forget, Jack was with them when they came to the park. We see Jack kind of hiding, once again, hiding in the bushes, and he's completely visible. I don't know what he's hiding from. He's obviously hiding from the cops, but the cops here in this town are just stupid. So, Jack ends up getting away, does not get arrested, and he kind of runs off, and we don't see him again for a little bit. Then we see Lady Di looking decrepit as hell, just like she's falling apart. She's looking worse and worse every time we see her.
Lady about to die is what she looks
like. Lady about to die. So she finds a homeless guy on the bench in the park. Once again, this is broad daylight. At this point, she's not even trying to be careful anymore. She just needs her youth. So she finds a homeless guy on the bench, offers him a cup of tea from the teacup. Lo and behold, the homeless man turns towards her, and it's Jack wearing a wig. Question, why the fuck was Jack wearing a wig? Jack has never met Lady Di. She wouldn't have recognized him anyway. Why the fuck did he feel the need to wear a wig? And it was a terrible wig. It was such an awful toupee. It looked fake instantly. Again, this show, the choices they make for, like, no reason. Like I said, there's no reason for Jack to disguise himself. She didn't know who he is, so it doesn't matter. So, again, just, you know, calling out the silliness of these episodes. Jack takes the cup and runs away with it. Lady Di kind of falls over crying. She ends up calling her manager on the phone.
Venom, just to touch on Jack and his clever disguise. I want to say, because I already kind of forgot some of the details of the earlier episodes we covered, but I know for sure, and it might have been the monastery episode, but I really hope that it is a running theme/gag in, like, the entire series that Jack has the most non-disguised disguises. Because, like, it's hilarious where, like, he's like, oh, I'm just going to slap a toupee on, and they'll never recognize me. Like, what the hell's going on here? I think the monastery episode, too, like, I think he showed up kind of, like, in the garb, but, like, other than that, he wasn't disguised. So, like, I really hope that, like, every episode where he has to, like, dress up to, like, be hidden, that he's totally just looks like himself in, like, different clothes.
That'd be great. I'd be down.
Like, the way he, like, turned around to, like, face Lady Di, though, like, it was so dramatic. Like, it's so like good. He, like, automatically just, like, ripped off his wig, like, hey, look, it was me this whole time. But, like, you're right, like, they never met.
It was like he was taking off the mask at the end of a Scooby-Doo episode, like, oh, my God, it's Jack. And he kind of held up the cup too, like, hey, I got the cup, and then
okay, so at this point Lady Di calls her manager, tells him because it's the night of the charity concert. The manager was about to cancel it. She tells him, don't cancel it, I'll be there, blah blah blah. Obviously Jack foils her plan, so she's not able to get another victim. So Mickey and Ryan are then released from jail. Oh, we don't actually see them released, but they're out. And I can only assume it's because Birdie didn't die. She probably woke up, let the police know Mickey and Ryan had nothing to do with this, and they were released, because we see Mickey and Ryan at Lady Di's trailer. And they're sitting there, and they're trying to plot how to get in there and get the teacup. They don't realize that Jack already got the cup away from her. And then Jack shows up, literally right there at the trailer. Jack reunites with Mickey and Ryan, lets them know, hey, I got the cup already, we can get out of here. They're about to leave, and literally the manager turns the corner, realizes that they're, you know, kind of congregating around the entrance of her trailer right before her concert, and she's already 10 minutes late. We could already hear the crowd, you know, screaming for her name. Finally, what ends up happening is the trailer door opens, and we hear a voice say, what was it, like, let's get ready to rock, or time to rock. I can't remember exactly what she said, but yeah, it was something along those lines, or it's showtime. I think that was it. It's showtime. But then once the door fully opens, literally, Lady Di is like a mummified corpse. Like, I'm not exaggerating, folks. She looked like a fucking mummy without all the bandages. Just nasty and rotten. She falls over, and I love these little indiscrepancies in TV shows and movies. She falls face first off the edge of the trailer, but then she lands back first. Like, when the camera changes angle, she falls on her back first. I know it's minor, but I'm still going to call this shit out because it's funny to me. And then the show basically just ends with Jack, you know, with Ryan giving a terrible tea time joke. Oh, and it also ends with Birdie apparently adopting Kristen, which is another head scratcher. Like, what? I mean, isn't there a process? Like, doesn't she have to go through, like, weeks of paperwork and interviews? Nope. I'm just going to take this homeless girl and call her mine. Woohoo! And that's pretty much how our episode ends. The cup is vaulted, and Birdie takes Kristen to her new home, and credits roll. That is a cup of time. Like I said, I really found this episode fun, and even talking about it right now, I actually kind of like it more. It was fun, a decent little antagonist. They actually had a rock star playing a rock star, which, you know, she had the mentality, she had the look, she had that kind of boss bitch energy that, you know, female rock stars sometimes have. So yeah, Hillary Shepherd was a great choice for this role. Believe it or not, she was not the first choice to play Lady Di. The first person who was supposed to play Lady Di was Moon Zappa. Obviously most people are more familiar with her famous father, Frank Zappa, and his son, Dweezil Zappa, but one of his daughters is actually named Moon Zappa. She was actually up for the role, and the reason that she was up for the role is that the producers didn't like Hillary Shepherd's kind of tough girl look. You know, she had a very, like I said, that boss bitch energy. You know, I don't know what what's the equivalent of big D energy for females? Let's go with that. You know, she had that big D energy, that big V energy. Oh, wait, that's probably not good.
Yeah, it's probably not.
Who wants a big vagina? Anyway.
Bitch in charge.
There you go.
HBIC.
Now, one of the things... one of the things I like to do is whenever they show the ledger, I like to freeze on that frame and just kind of look at what potentially might be some cursed items that we'll see later on down the line, or they'll never be mentioned again in the show. But I always find it fascinating. In this episode, when they looked in the ledger, we see a listing for a haunted harmonica, an umbrella stand made of oak from 1930, and then we have something called the Cupid of Malik, and this item is not crossed off, so they have not gotten this item back into the store yet. The other items, the harmonica, the umbrella stand, you can see them on the list. They've been crossed off. What else is on here? A cigarette case, an Italian table, Italian in quotations. I'm not sure why it's in quotes, but there you go. It's quote-unquote Italian. A Victorian table lamp from the 1800s, a paperweight, and that's all the listing says is paperweight. I wish it was a little bit more descriptive, but that's all it says. And then a pair of jade earrings with a dragon motif. Those are the items that were listed in the ledger this episode. I think that Cupid of Malik sounds interesting. Like I said, there's no description whatsoever of it. I just like that name, the Cupid of Malik. So who knows? Maybe if there's a Valentine's episode down the line, we'll see it.
Yeah. Well, we did watch the Valentine's episode, didn't we? What was the
Wasn't that a Cupid statue? But it wasn't.
Yeah,
but this one wasn't crossed off. Now, don't forget, we talked about this on the very first episode where some of these first few episodes were recorded out of order. Like the second episode of the show was actually the first one filmed, so on and so forth. So, you know, maybe that statue is the Cupid of Malik from that episode. I don't remember its exact name. I'm actually looking through my episodes because the episode was called Cupid's Quiver, and there's no mention of the Cupid of Malik. So who knows? This could be an item that we'll see later on down the line, or like I said, we'll never see it again. Now, Hillary Shepherd actually had some very positive stories, some very positive stories, and one very negative story about her time on the episode. She hit it off with Louise Roby and John LeMay. She hit it off with them immediately. Like, they became really good friends. They even kept in touch after, you know, this episode was done and they went their separate ways. She talked about how sweet they were, how fun they were to hang out with. They actually went to a James Brown concert together during the filming of this episode, which I found kind of interesting because I fucking love James Brown. I would have loved to have seen him live. But yeah, they actually went to a James Brown concert in 87. Now, her bad experience, and it had to do with the makeup. The guys that were doing the prosthetics on this show were basically untrained, you know, makeup artists. They had, this was their first production. They had never gone to school. They literally had never learned the craft. They were learning the craft as they went. And Hillary Shepherd told stories of how in the mornings when they would put her makeup on, they would literally have instruction manuals open to the chapters that they needed to apply the makeup to her. And apparently they fucked up so bad that at the end of the first day of shooting with makeup, they couldn't get her makeup off. They couldn't get the witch mask off her. And they literally sat there. They're looking through all their manuals. They're looking through their books, trying to find information on how to get this thing off. And they find out that they realize that they forgot to powder her face before they put the makeup on. So they literally put the mask, the epoxy mask or acrylic, foam rubber. They literally put it directly on her skin with the glue. So literally they couldn't get the mask off that first day. They ended up having to get solvent to get the mask off. And then she couldn't do anything the next day because her face was red. She actually got a little bit of a rash. They ended up having to take a couple of days off from shooting, or at least shooting her scenes, so that her face could recover, and then she could go back. And then after that, there was like a running joke. I don't know how funny of a joke it is, but there was a running joke amongst the makeup artists there where they would, after that first day, they were like, okay, we learned our lesson. We're going to powder the snot out of you. And they would say that to her all through the rest of the production. We're going to powder the snot out of you. We're going to powder the snot out of you. To the point where one of the prosthetics guys would actually follow her around set. And if her face started to show any kind of shine or glistening of any kind, they would powder it instantly. And that became the running joke of, we're going to powder the snot out of you. The makeup, however, you know, it was mildly effective. Like, you know, we've made fun of it here, but, you know, for what it was, for a low-budget, late-80s TV show, it wasn't the worst makeup I've ever seen. And then one last story, which is kind of a funny story, is that the makeup was, apparently the makeup looked better in person than it did on camera, the way that we see the final result. So much so that the makeup guys actually had Hillary walk, like run around the park in her full witch makeup or her old Sarah makeup. I guess at one point she came out of a bush onto a playground and all the kids scattered. They started screaming. She was freaked out right away and she ran back into the woods and hid. A little bit later, she said that she actually heard kids telling their parents, a witch came out of the woods and she was chasing us and she was going to eat us and blah, blah, blah. And that she was in the bush laughing to herself, and that at one point she actually wanted to come out of the bushes and say, no, 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 your kids aren't lying. There was a misunderstanding. I'm in my makeup, blah, blah, blah. She decided not to do it because she was concerned she was going to freak out the parents just as much. She just came out of the woods in this old lady makeup that you know, potentially the adults would be just as freaked out as the kids were. But I like stories like that. It shows that the actors, you know, they have a good sense of humor. Despite maybe not having the best time on the set, they still, you know, had some fun, had some laughs, and obviously, you know, made some lifelong friends. So, yeah, I'd say the episode was a success overall. What do you guys say?
I like how she, like, told a story about coming out of hiding from a bush. Like, that's what it should have been called, the haunted bushes.
A hero story, coming out of the bush.
Like, I think it's fun. Like, I mean, if you're getting a fountain of youth and you're going to be a rock star, you're really going to be singing about a teacup. And also, I like how they have, like, the throwaway line, oh, it was one of Sarah's favorite little limericks. I'm a that's like how, like, they like put it all together, and like all of a sudden, like, the songs are just like, I'm a little teapot. Like, I never thought I would hear a rock band or like a punk rock like 80s anthem of I'm a little teapot ever.
And now you know, and why you're like, having. Girl.
And then Kristen sang it to herself in the park after she stole the teacup. I don't know, like. I don't know if Kristen realizes that Lady Di has that song and she was kind of mocking her by singing it, or if it was just a little girl who just stole a teacup and thought of the song. I can't imagine Kristen would know who Lady Di is. I mean, she didn't recognize her by face. She just said the pretty lady with the fiery hair, so.
Like, she's homeless, unless, like, she's, like, living in a car and hearing it on a radio. I highly doubt it.
Exactly, exactly. That's why I it kind of felt like a backhanded insult that the little girl's singing the song to the teacup. I don't know. I found it interesting. Oh,
and
man.
How silly are these homeless people? Like, they're, like, literally, they said it, like, what, 5 deaths, and they're all still just chilling in the same fucking park?
And accepting drinks from strangers? I mean, what the fuck? Yeah, a mysterious woman in a black robe offers you a hot cup of tea and you take it? What? Sorry,
man. Sometimes she's aged, sometimes she's not.
Exactly. It would have been funny. I would have loved it if one of the homeless guys was actually a fan and she walked up to him and he's like, oh, wow, Lady Di, I love you, blah, blah, blah. That would have been awesome. And then she's like, well, I can't kill a fan. Forget it. Or maybe she can kill a fan. Who knows?
This reminded me of, like, a Goosebumps book, like, or, like, a story. Like, if you, like, ever watched, it might have been too young for you, but if you never watched like the Goosebumps TV series or read the Goosebumps book, it definitely felt like one of those type of stories. It's very kind of like PG almost compared to like some of the other ones we watched with like the guillotine. But nobody's jumping off a building. But yeah, this one was definitely more PG compared to some of the other episodes we've watched. But
no possessed doll ripping people's throats out. Yeah.
And when her, when she felt like, I like how she's still like planning to go on with the concert as she's like literally dying. And up until like they go and like knock on her trailer and she literally just falls out, she was still going to go on stage to her dying death. I was kind of confused like how like she was aging backwards. Like how long had she been doing this? They said only like 5 cups, right? So how long does it actually last?
I think it's implied that once you use it once, you have to keep using it or you're just going to lose your life force at a fast rate. Now, obviously, they don't mention that in the episode. I'm just kind of putting two and two together. I could be wrong, but that's kind of the way I look at it, that once you use it once, you kind of have to use it, because if you stop using it, the cup takes – it's almost like the cup needs life force, so it's either going to take the owner's life force or the victim. Like I said, that's the way I look at it. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, almost like a symbiotic relationship where it's like one refills the other. It's kind of like dependent. Because sometimes it is like that way with like cursed objects. Like the cursed object gives you something, but it needs something in return to even keep functioning or working. So yeah, I can see that.
Mike, early in the episode, you said a tale as old as time. Were you meaning that to be, like, funny, as in because from Beauty and the Beast, Mrs. Potts, who is a teapot, and her son is a teacup?
She got it.
Like, she sings that. Was that...
I don't know if Mike's that savvy, but yeah. He is a dad, so he's definitely seen Beauty and the Beast.
Lacey Lee, you laid that out so well, I should take credit for that analysis, but really I was just more thinking of like, you know, old person wants to stay youthful, so
yep.
You know, because a lot of the what you get with a lot of like horror anthology shows is they're very familiar show, because like you're doing what, the Hitchcock show right now, and yeah, and I don't think that's necessarily about like curse. But just like a lot of these stories that we get in horror shows, like if you watch stuff back from like the 50s and 60s and then later on like in the 80s or 90s, you see like a lot of like similar themes just used again with a different object, or they blend it into like a new version of it. So when I was just doing the very simplistic like, hey, it's another theme about like trying to stay young through the years, and it just happens to be a cursed teacup that's accomplishing the goal in this episode. But Lacey, that was a brilliant analysis by you, and I will try to take half credit for it, I guess.
I totally thought that's what you were doing, but like,
Mike doesn't make Disney puns.
No, like, so like this show's like all about haunted objects. Like, we are going through like the Hitchcock Presents, and most of those so far, like, we've done 24 episodes of the first season. There's 39 episodes in each fucking season, and there's 7 of them, I believe. So it's a lot. But we've done 24 of them, and most of them kind of just revolve around, like, stealing somebody's – or plotting murder to get money, or just, yeah, like, taking identity to get money. That's, like, the majority of the plots of those.
Yeah, that tends to be – like, that actually tends to be a lot of Hitchcock movies, too. Like, yep. He has the more horror-centric specific movies, but, like, if you actually – I bought, like, the first three Hitchcock collections on 4K, and, like, outside of the ones we know to be horror, a lot of them are, like, murder mystery movies.
Yeah.
And even the horror movies, I mean, are sometimes
– yeah, kind of.
Psycho is kind of a murder mystery.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. All right, shoppers. Well, this is going to be your final warning. The store will be closing in approximately 10 minutes. Please bring your final purchases to the front and look out for the spill in aisle 3. Mike is taking his sweet time cleaning up that spill, but hopefully he'll get to it at some point. But in the meantime...
It's a curse spill. I got to be careful.
It was spilled from the teacup.
Oh no!
It was what Bertie threw away from the scotch.
Oh, it's whiskey. Oh well, then don't clean it up. I'll get it myself.
I'm just licking it.
All right. So, Miss Lacey Liu, once again, thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners where else they can find you?
Well, all of my podcasts that I do, it's under one umbrella, under Cut to the Chase. You can find it with a little slate and blood logo on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever podcasts are found. Slumber Party Massacre, Cut to the Chase, Skip to the Loo, The Last 20. The most recent episode that we have out of Slumber Party is Lepers Scorn, where we talk about horror movies that were involved where lovers are scorned. We have a March Madness episode coming out where we talk about movies that made us mad. So that was quite the fun episode. So you'll have to see which one made us the most pissed off, I guess. And then we our feature presentation on that was Madman, and that was my first time watch for that, so that was fun. And then Cut to the Chase, we had a Valentine's Day episode where we covered Lover's Lane for the horror, and our listeners voted on us to do Wedding Singer as the rom-com that we wanted to do. So that's out now. I think we're going to maybe and all of our Alfred Hitchcocks that you heard us talk about, we just dropped one on Thursday. That was a fun one. So definitely check. Oh, and I also do Full House ones too, Full House commentaries. I'm on season one. Those are really stupid, but I have a good time with them. So yeah, check them out.
Awesome. And of course, for Michael and myself, you can hear us on the No More Room in Hell family of podcasts, which, of course, includes the main show, No More Room in Hell, Creature Comforts, Fresh Cuts, the Crystal Lake Gift Shop, which, of course, you're listening to right now, and maybe Watch This Movie Mike, which might be making a return sooner than later. Let's hope Mike has something for us, because I was enjoying that podcast, and I was actually planning on a movie to bring to you for that show, but I don't know. Time just got away from us. Like I said, the end of 2023 kind of kicked my ass. So hopefully that one will be back soon.
That's one of the problems with, like, when I start, like, kind of a sidecast where I call it low priority, then it's like I mentally, like, make it a point to make it low priority. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh, 6 months have gone by. I guess it really was low priority. But it's pretty easy to, like, schedule because it's usually just me and one person. So – yeah, if you got something. And I've actually, it's funny because, like, when I first started doing it, I reached out to some people and people were, like, busy at the time, but they've reached back out to me and been like, hey, I got time in a movie. And I'm like, and now I'm the one that's like, okay, I'll get back to you. But yeah, I'm totally down to do more episodes of it. So nice. I guess look for that in the future too.
Look for the grand return of Watch This Movie Mike as well, hopefully sooner than later. And my friends, thank you all so much for joining us. This is Mr. Venom letting you all know the Crystal Lake Gift Shop is now closed. Let's say bye to the folks.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for having me back.